Chapter 11. I tore the rug from the trapdoor again. I'd packed almost all of my questionable materials into a large nylon gym bag. I slung it over my shoulder, grabbed my duster, staff, and blasting rod, and nearly killed myself trying to go down the ladder too quickly. I stopped a couple of steps from the bottom and reached up to close the trapdoor again. There was a pair of simple bolts on the lower side of the door, so that I or the grasshopper could signal the other that something delicate was in progress and distractions might be dangerous. I locked the door down firmly. "What's going on?" blurted Bob from his shelf. "Bob, I need the wards down now."
"Why don't you just—"
"Because they'll come back up 5 minutes after I've used the disarming spell. I need them down. Get off your bony ass and do it."
"But that will knock them out for at least a week."
"I know. Go do it, and hurry. You have my permission to leave the skull for that purpose."
"Aye, aye, oh captain, my captain," Bob said sourly.
A small cloud of orange, sparkling light flowed out of the skull's eye sockets and rushed upstairs through the cracks at the edge of the trapdoor. I immediately started dumping things into my bag. I was making a mess doing it, too, but there was no help for that. Less than half a minute later, Bob returned and flowed back into the skull again.
"There are a bunch of guys in suits and uniforms knocking on the door, Harry."
"I know."
"Why?" he asked. "What's going on?"
"Trouble," I said. "What do I have in here that's illegal?"
"Do I look like an attorney? These ain't law books I'm surrounded by."
There was a heavy slam of impact from upstairs. Whoever was up there was trying a ram on the door. Good luck with that, boys. I'd had my door knocked down before. I had installed a heavy metal security door that nothing short of explosives was going to overcome. "Where's the ghost dust?" I asked.
"One shelf over, two up, cigar tin in a brown cardboard box,"
Bob said promptly. "Thanks," I said. "That section of rhino horn?"
"Under the shelf to your left, plastic storage bin."
So it went, with Bob's flawless memory speeding the process. I wound up stuffing the bag full. Then I tore the Paranet map off the wall and added it to the bag and tossed the directory of contact numbers for its members in next to it. The last thing I needed was the FBI deciding that I was the hub of a network of terrorist cells. Bob's skull went in too. I zipped the bag closed, leaving just enough opening for Bob to see out. Last, I took the two swords, at least one of which had been used in murders in the Chicago area, slipped them through some straps on the side of the bag, and then hurriedly duct-taped them into place, just to be sure I wouldn't lose them. Then I drew on my duster and slung the bag strap over my shoulder with a grunt. The thing was heavy. Bangs and bumps continued upstairs. There was a sudden, sharp cracking sound. I winced. The door and its frame might be industrial strength, but the house they were attached to was a wooden antique from the previous turn of the century. It sounded like something had begun to give.
"I told you," Bob said. "You should have found out what was on the other side from here long before now."
"And I told you," I replied, "that the last thing I wanted to do was thin the barrier between my own home and the bloody never-never by going through it and then attracting the attention of whatever hungry boogity-boo was on the other side."
"And you were wrong," Bob said smugly. "And I told you so."
There was a tremendous crash upstairs, and someone shouted, "FBI!" At the same time, someone else was shouting,
"Chicago PD!"
An instant later, someone shouted a startled curse, and a gun went off.
"What was that?"
screamed a rather high-pitched voice.
"A cat,"
said Agent Tilly's voice, dripping with disdain.
"You opened fire on a freaking cat, and missed."
Mister. My heart pounded in my chest. I'd forgotten all about him. But, true to his nature, Mister seemed to have taken care of his own daring escape. There were chuckles from several voices.
"It isn't funny,"
snapped the other voice. It was Rudolph, all right.
"This guy is dangerous."
"Clear," called a voice from another room, which meant my bedroom and bathroom, since it was the only other room available. "Nothing in here."
"Damn it,"
Rudolph said.
"He's here somewhere. Are you sure your men spotted him through the window?"
"They saw someone moving around in here not 5 minutes ago. Doesn't mean it was him." There was a pause, and then Agent Tilly said,
"Or, gee, maybe he's down in the sub-basement under that trap door over there."
"You still have men in place at the windows?" Rudolph asked.
"Yes,"
Tilly said wearily. He raised his voice a bit, as if speaking to someone on the far side of a large room.
"This place is buttoned up. There's nowhere for him to go." Let's just hope he shows himself and gives himself up quietly. We'll be sure to respect all his rights and everything, and if he cooperates, this could be over pretty quickly. I paused. I had some choices to make. I could still do as Tilly suggested. In the long run, it was obviously the best choice for me. I'd be questioned and cleared by anyone reasonable, that is, not Rudolph. I could even point them at the Duchess's business interests and turn them loose to become a thorn in her side. After that, I would be back to the status quo of wary cooperation with the authorities. But that process would take precious time, a couple of days at the very least. I didn't have that kind of time. Agent Tilly struck me as someone not entirely unreasonable, but if I approached him now, protesting my innocence, and then vanished, I'd be up for resisting arrest at the very least. Even if everything else in this mess panned out in my favor, that could get me jail time, which I wished to avoid. Besides, there wasn't anything Tilly could do for Maggie. And I had to admit it. I was angry. This was my home, damn it. You don't just break down the door of a man's home on the say-so of a snake like Rudolph. I had plenty of anger already stored up, but hearing those voices in my living room added another large lump to the mound. I doubted my ability to remain polite for very long. So, instead of stopping to talk, I turned to the summoning circle, stepped into it, summoned up my will, and whispered, "Aperturum." I waved my staff from left to right, infusing the tool with my will, and reality rolled up along it like a scroll. Soft green light began to emanate from the empty air in front of me in a rectangular area 7 feet tall and half as wide, a doorway between my apartment and the Never Never. I had no idea what was on the other side. The bolts to the trapdoor began to rattle. I heard someone call for a saw. The door wasn't closely fitted. They'd be able to slip a saw blade through the crack and slice those two bolts in seconds.